Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back.
march on towards 1,500. Welcome. As we get ready to sit down and get down with the chefs. Good evening, everybody. My name is Michael Lewis, singing BJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to be with you on our Hump Day special. Proudly produced by BASNNewsroom.com and the Brothers and Sisters of the Brother Man Network. Get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now in www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. Our colleague, Ricky Hampton Sr. in Detroit. Mark Robeson in Oakland, California. Excuse me. Me with gas. Patrick Freeman in Northern New York, or rather Western New York. Rochester, Buffalo vicinity, doing do as only Obad do. And riding shotgun with me until the other chefs get here. My main man, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Craig. What up, G?
America has lost its mind again.
Oh, shit.
Michael?
Yes.
Every day, a thousand girls get lost.
Yep.
When a blue-eyed blonde hair girl go missing, it's on national news.
Yep.
Right?
That's right.
You met an Asian girl,
mm-hmm.
or a black girl,
mm-hmm.
or a Latino girl get lost, you will never hear them again.
Well, there's truth to that, sadly. But before you go further, tell everybody who we are.
Okay. We'll be right up again.
The Sports Network has served as the definitive source for information about the black athlete. Whether it be historical or analytical, BASN has always celebrated the contributions of sports' most innovative and unique being, the black athlete. In 2016, as we relaunch blackathlete.com, look for more of the same from our unique set of writers and historians. We have been and always will be the soul of sports. We are BASN.
We are BASN.
Yes, we are.
And the reason why I brought this up is because a young 18-year-old went missing in Wyoming, Nevada, or out of the West.
Okay.
This 18-year-old was engaged to a young man.
Engaged. Okay.
Okay. This young man drove her car back to where they live.
Right.
Went to his mother and father's house for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't say jack shit about anything. And the police show up.
Jeez.
And when the police show up, they couldn't find him.
So you see what it is. It's always been this way, G. You know, they know that. And they try to minimize black lives, especially black female lives. I get that.
What is that?
But
what is that in the news? You can't find it.
It doesn't matter. I'll tell you something that myself and Sheer Will, who I give a shout out to, our brother William Reynolds, we did this as an experiment a little while ago. Now, you know, on Facebook, they would always show or pass on flashes of a missing person, right? And we took a count. A rough count of each night that at least one black girl was missing. We got up to 85 consecutive days. 85. Where at least one was missing. And, you know, I would always put the post on, please pass on. And so we will. And 85 straight days we did that before I even had a job. Would be fundraising, and I had forgotten about it or whatever, but that long, almost 3 months, where we knew somebody had either taken a girl or killed a girl or a girl went missing and showed up dead days later. You know, every now and then they found one, the girl was found, and everything was, oh, thank God. But, no, G, yeah, this has been going on for a while.
I know. You know, I go to a Korean church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable how many Korean Americans missing. And that one, I looked at the news today, this is by now.
Yep.
Zero.
Well, sadly, that's what it is. You can't go looking if you don't think it's worth looking. And they never believe that it's worth looking for a black girl. Sad to say, it's the truth. I remember reading Ebony magazine and seeing how things were done to little black girls, like sterilization and shit like that, that should never have happened to them. But they were done because some white person thought it had to be done. They couldn't see themselves allowing black life to continue in any shape, fashion, or form, especially with young black girls. So this is something that's part of the underbelly that folks don't want to talk about until it happens to them. And we know it's going to continue on as we sit here doing our jobs here. There's going to be a little sister missing. Now, in the era since the Amber Alert was made popular, it was cool for Amber and for a lot of other little Ambers, but rarely was there an Amber Alert on a black child. So I feel your frustration with this because, okay, if a kid's missing, a kid's missing, you know. If you've got a system that will help to alleviate some of the nonsense and you know, accelerate these things, then cool, we're all for it. But no,
it should be for all races of children, not just little black players.
Yes, it should. But you know how that's valued in this society, and they remind you that every time somebody blue-eyed and blonde gets in trouble. So hey, I'm glad you brought that up because that brings me to a very unusual segue. You know, now it's 2021, but 60 years ago, there was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed motherfucker who was supposed to be the heartthrob of all sports. This was 1961, and Paul Hornung had just been named league MVP.
Yep.
Now, he scored in the previous year 176 points in one season. Now, that's a record. But people forget Paul Hornung was also the place kicker for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
Now, On April 17th of 1963, Paul Hornung, the Green Bay running back, and Alex Karras, who was an all-pro defensive tackle for the Detroit Lions,
yeah,
when they were actually still good, although Bobby Lane had cursed their ass, were betting on football games. They were suspended by Pete Rozelle for betting.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started.
Hold on. They were suspended indefinitely for betting on NFL games and associating with gamblers. Now, Hornung, said Rozelle in the press conference, had bet up to $500 on NFL games. Remember, this is 1960, Manny. So what would $500 be in 2021? Good question. I would have to think it's somewhere in the five-figure range, at least. And Karras, Webster's father, he said it placed at least a half dozen bets from $50 to $100. Both players sat out for a full season before being reinstated. Five other Detroit players were fined for betting on the 1962 championship game.
Yep.
Hornung apologized. I made a terrible mistake. I am truly sorry, you lying motherfucker. Still, he was later inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And just a couple of years ago, Karras was inducted as well. Now, the reason this is being brought out is because the gambling bug is going wild. And Reed can't kill
it. It's been a very good butt. It's been done.
No joke. No. You know, this betting thing has really uprooted into something that is now taken, or it's not rooted any longer. It's walking the streets like the peanut butter and jelly sandwich that ate Cleveland from the monster movie. Okay, so let's understand this. John Oliver, who's a guy I really like, he's a humorist on the heels of people like Trevor Noah and Chris Rock and stuff like that. And he does a show on cable called Last Week Tonight, but he can riff on just about anything.
Yeah.
He dedicated last Sunday show to gambling and sports betting and how it has become viral. And I don't mean viral like a lot of people getting it. No, I'm talking viral like a lot of people are going to get sick from spending money that they don't have on football. Now, some terrible analogies prop up with this because it's one thing if you're betting on something, like, say, a horse race. In a horse race, horses are trained, different conditions. Some run better on grass. Some run better on dirt. Some run better when it's sloppy. All of that. There are factors that they put in. And now NFL quarterbacks are going to be looked at in the same manner. Now, it's one thing if it's a race that's equal from Jump Street. But what happens when you have a game where it's already been decided who wins?
The NFL is one of the most profitable companies in the United States. The Super Bowl dominates television every year, but some things work out just a bit too well. I'm not here to persuade or start an argument, but I'm Nick Miller, and on this episode of 10 Things, I give you 10 reasons the NFL is scripted. Number 10, shared income. The NFL shares 70 to 75% of its $10 plus billion a year income, including television, broadcast, internet rights, and licenses. Ticket sales are split 66% for the home team and 34% shared equally among all franchises. Only luxury box sales, which explains the need for new stadiums, local ads and sponsorships, and official pro shop sales are not shared. It would make logical sense to keep every team in the NFL quiet by splitting ticket sales even to the teams that weren't there. Number 9. Entertainment. While we refer to the NFL as a sport, they are in fact entertainment, a fact that the NFL has argued in front of the Supreme Court. In 2010, the NFL argued to continue to be in the entertainment business. Being entertainment means the NFL are legally entitled to do whatever is needed to entertain their audiences, such as creation and promotion of certain storylines. Despite arguments to the contrary, this makes the NFL on par with roller derby and professional wrestling. Number 8. Legal responsibility. The tickets you purchase to a sporting event proves this notion of it being entertainment. The Spygate lawsuit proves this. In this lawsuit, a New York Jets fan sued the New England Patriots for illegally, by NFL's rules, videotaping their opponent coaching signals. The lawsuit attested for the Jets ticket holder money back in 10 years worth of games. You can read the U.S. Appeals Court's complete ruling in this case down below, but the main conclusion was this. At best, he possessed nothing more than a contractual right to a seat from which to watch a NFL game, basically saying that when buying a ticket, you only get a seat. Let's be honest, you wouldn't sue the WWE for the authorities during Daniel Bryan because it's entertainment, and it's the same for the NFL, but people don't accept it as entertainment. Number 7. Fixing games. There is no law against the league fixing its own contest. The two closest laws are the quiz show law, which prevents forms of entertainment like game shows of fixing intellectual challenges and questions. Key word is intellectual, which allows sports to be exempted from the law. The second law is the Sports Bribery Act of 1964, which only states that organizations like the Mafia are not allowed to fix games by betting or gambling on the events. However, the NFL can do what it wants. Number 6. Media. It is legal for the media to lie to us all. Don't believe me? Read the article below. If this can occur, do you honestly believe that ESPN, ABC, Disney, CBS, Fox, NBC, Universal, and Time Warner report truly and accurately on the sports they fund? The majority of these companies give the NFL alone $6 billion a season. Number 5. History. Contrary to popular belief, there have been fixed games in league history. On page 308 of Dom Modia's book, Interference, he lists over 70 games that have been fixed and the two referees involved in fixing. He also lists interviews with several NFL Hall of Famers who attest to games being fixed before. NFL refs are paid by the NFL and under contract to do what the league tells them to do, so this could be how the NFL scripts their season. Number 4. Players are paid to play, not to win. Win, lose, or draw, players are paid for just being there. With equal incentives, it would be easier to convince players to be a part of the NFL as a scripted sports entertainment company. Number 3. Retirement. The Super Bowl is the NFL's biggest event of the year, dominates television, and no matter what happens, will have the nation's attention. But it doesn't hurt to add some drama. Several players such as Jack Reynolds, Randy Cross, Jay Novacek, Jerome Bettis, Mel Renfro, Forrest Gregg, Michael Strahan, John Elway, and Ray Lewis all retired after winning the Super Bowl. Number 2. Unreal Drama. In Super Bowl 34, following a play where Steve McNair miraculously sheds two Rams defensive linemen, finds Kevin Dyson at the St. Louis 10. The Titans are left with 6 seconds on the clock, down 23-16. McNair makes the pass, and Mike Jones is able to make the play. Incidents like this occur in Super Bowls all the time. Just recently, the Seahawks passing on the last play, handing the win to New England. This adds incredible drama to spice the biggest event of the year. And number 1, NFL wrestling crossover. Several football players have made the jump to pro wrestling. The argument could be made that they were successful as they did have history as a sports entertainer. Just a few of the successful football players turned wrestlers are William the Refrigerator Perry, who main evented a WrestleMania, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Brock Lesnar, and Roman Reigns. Did I leave anything out? What's your opinion on the topic? Let me know in the comments below. I'm Nick Miller, and this is 10 Things.
But I digress. He did a pretty good job. He left out another player who had a wrestling background and played pretty damn well for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Carlton Hasselrig. He was a wrestler, noted to be a wrestler, but his talents gave him a showcase with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh scooped his ass up, and he played pretty decent for a couple of years. We have the professor with us on the line as well. And, fellas, the one thing that they did not tell you in that little soliloquy was that the NFL, as it is right now, is a 501c6 entity. What that means in layman's terms is that the league is a not-for-profit entity. So if we ask the W5 questions, who, what, when, where, why, who the fuck was able to work this deal? When the fuck did they do it? What the hell allowed this to happen? Where was this going to go? And why the fuck did nobody stop it? Now, having said that, good evening, Professor. Would you be so kind as to listen to me? Yes.
When the Air Bell was created, what year was that?
In the 30s. 33, I believe.
And
even before
the Air Bell was a small entity back then.
True.
Right?
Yep.
Whatever it was, it became the monster in the room in the 70s and 80s. They merged with the television network.
No, I agree. I know that happened, but something happened before then, G. You had the big game in 58 between the Colts and the Giants.
That changed the whole dynamic of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did was everybody, if you ask anybody on the East Coast, and over 65 years old, they will tell you that they saw that game.
Well, we're all in that category, so Professor, if you would, did your interest in football increase after the 58 championship game? And good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, it was after, but a long ways after, because back then we had the three channels. You're talking about the 58 championship game between New York and, I guess, it was Baltimore?
Yeah, it was Baltimore. Yes.
Okay. I can honestly say I ain't seen it. I just started watching football for several more years, to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Well into the 60s. And even then, it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, I knew who Bubba Smith was and a few other guys. Because of several racial issues, we didn't have a football team in my high school. We didn't have a football field in the city field that was whites play on. We weren't allowed to play there. The first black player they had was in 1950, Carl. And those guys went over. We were in the 9th, 10th grade. So that would have been like 67, 68. I went to a game or two, but I really didn't see a game until I went back my senior year and played against the guys that I grew up with. I was a reader. I was not a big TV watcher.
That was the first professional game I ever saw, and
like Gary was saying, though, football was football, but football wasn't football the way we know it now by any stretch of imagination. And because of that, I played baseball and basketball, and I watch more baseball because I watch baseball came on every Saturday. And then I would watch, matter of fact, I probably watch more basketball on Sunday.
Okay.
Because I think basketball for us came on ABC.
ABC.
Carried football especially after the merger. But early on, I can't remember. I think early on, NBC maybe carried, started carrying the AFL. CBS had the NFL. And ABC carried the NBA.
Right.
So about another 2 or 3 weeks from now, we start seeing the NBA, because I don't think they played but 60-something games back then in the NBA.
There was a lower amount, yes.
So I mean, then they added the other teams, and then you had the merge and all that. So the games jumped up to what, 82 now?
82.
Yeah,
82.
But what Gary was saying is somewhat true, and that is early on, the NFL created that because the NFL wasn't making that much money. I mean, you had playoff games that were loaded. You had even sponsorships was nowhere. I mean, come on, you know. I remember seeing a program from some NFL team, and one of the advertisers that had, I want to say it was an eighth or sixth of a page, and
okay.
It was like, you know, Joe's Burger Joint, because back
right.
then there was no, I mean, back then McDonald's didn't exist. Well, if it did,
right.
it was still on the West Coast somewhere. Hardee's, Hardee's was still in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. They didn't even advertise in Washington, D.C.,
wow.
and that's 200 miles away.
Yep.
Matter of fact, Hardee's grew out of North Carolina, and Hardee's didn't become a major franchise, and I want to say until the very late '60s, and that was in the major markets along the East
okay.
Coast.
Well, that's like Kentucky Fried Chicken. Kentucky Fried Chicken was not on any commercial.
Well, that's true. The Colonel
was still in Kentucky, eating his own chicken.
That's right.
So
Colonel was still in Kentucky, and if you look at the big picture, it was the TV exposure that changed everything. The game was on television. Now, I was only 4 years old when the game was, and I know y'all may be older or younger than me, but
so
they were
watch
making
him
a
out.
Big fuss over this. Yes, I'm. So now it's 58. The game got the exposure. All of a sudden, everybody's digging pro football, and people are watching. So now this small team, this small location in Wisconsin, starts to build on a dynasty. He had survived the early years when a whole bunch of places had teams, and they all petered out. But Green Bay remains.
Mike,
yes.
that ice bowl up there in Milwaukee, that was probably an accident, because there again, you didn't have the capacity. I mean, remember them old cameras they used back then?
Yep.
And
yep.
three people
yep.
horse them up on the stand. You couldn't
yep.
move them. There
yep.
was only like four of them, maybe.
That's
one and
right.
a half, one from each end zone, one from
and
you know, the ass is crazy. I'm gonna say those two games in Green Bay, the 2 days the Cowboys lost, made me a Raider fan. But I'm telling you, because if Dallas had won those two games, I would be a Cowboy fan. But
oh, my God.
Lost those two games. Never had the Cowboys ever since.
Yeah. And I believe that Ice Bowl game is standing in the way of Jethro Pugh becoming a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Because if you remember the play, Pugh was the guy they wedged. on that block.
Yeah.
That loud star to sneak in. And Pugh had been a multiple times all-pro player. They always talked about Bob Lilly, but Jethro Pugh very often did most of the damn dirty work. You know,
Michael.
Yeah.
Jethro Pugh was to Bob Lilly and eventually Randy White the same
mm-hmm.
thing that Greenwood was for
exactly
Joe
mm-hmm.
Green.
For Joe Green.
I'm working on something, and one of the things that I noticed in information about, you know, how could you be a basketball player and not know a true basketball player and not know who John McClendon is? Well,
come on.
Unfortunately, Jethro Pugh, in his greatest day, greatest finest hour, when he was taking the double team, his those things were happening pre ESPN. And you
yep.
know, if anything that occurred before ESPN, unless you had somebody inside the room, they don't say it didn't happen. They say it didn't matter.
Right.
So when you hear these people talk about, well, you know, this is a venue and that venue. Well, I mean, I would say Whitaker Gym and several of the other, as they call them, Matchbox gyms,
yep.
are just as valuable to the growth of college basketball, if not more so, because that's where the black folks were playing. That's where they
grew
up. And see,
that's right.
And see, the kind of stuff you're looking at is if you go back to Black Magic and you hear
mm-hmm.
everybody talking about Earl Monroe and the spin,
mm-hmm.
Dick Barnett and the fallback,
yep.
different ones, little things that they did. You know,
yep.
you go back to
that fallback
kind of thing. All of those things were prior to ESPN, but.
BSPN, that's a good one. I like that.
Those are the things that made it a game that people wanted to watch. Because
that's true.
Remember, prior to 1950, Bob Cousy was the only person who dribbled behind his back and between his legs.
That's right. That's right. They gave
and
you
then,
Boston up the yin yang.
And then when did Boston arrive? As the king of the, you know, for each time, when did Boston
mm-hmm.
arrive as the king of professional basketball?
1950s.
No. Forget the year. Look at the people. Bill Russell.
Yeah.
The Jones boys.
Casey Jones off University of San Francisco. Yep, they got in there. Sat Sanders came in from NYU. I don't even think NYU has a basketball program anymore.
Okay, and then remember, they did for all that they were able to do. You know, most people forget that when you look at Boston,
mm-hmm.
Bill Russell was what 6'9"?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you had the two forwards. Now I'm having a brain fart.
Sanders was one.
Tommy Heinsohn was one.
And
they had another guy.
Yeah.
Who?
Heinsohn and Sanders.
Okay. No, Sanders and the other white guy. Not just Heinsohn.
Shit. Can't remember his name off the top.
Sanders was probably 6'7", 6'8". But then
yes, you
think about it. You had Heinsohn
Sam
and the
Jones.
Other white guy before
right.
Sanders became part of the rotation or was the major
Don
part
Nelson
of the
was
team.
On the squad, but he was a bench player. He wasn't in there yet.
That's him. That okay. Don Nelson came in. He was like 6'5", 6'6". But then you
right.
had a guard, a la Sam Jones, same height they
Jones.
Were.
Yep.
But he was a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And see, think about it. he gets downplayed and pushed to the background, but when they needed a shot, guess who they went to? If they went to Russell, his job was to pass the ball to Sam Jones.
Exactly.
Even in the game, Sam Jones was sick as a dog. They passed him the ball, and he put it up, put it in. And see, those are the things that made the game what people wanted to watch. Now they'll go back and see. You know, it was the same thing with the New York Knicks. You had Barnett at 6'5". You had Pearl at 6'4".
Yep.
And then you had those two big forward, the Busher and Bradley. You know, and they looked like the tower in the sky right up until you stood them up next to Willis Reed and Pearl. And I mean, you know, even the quote unquote point guard Frazier was almost as tall as they were. But what did you have?
That's true. Frazier was 6'5". He was legit 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
And see, those guys outperformed. And what was the other term we like to use? They were they did far better than they were expected to do.
But
that was the nature of the game. Because, see, if you go back and look at the way – because I'm working on the secret game and some other stuff about the history of basketball now. And one of the things that I was just sort of scoping through today was that when you go back and look at Coach McClendon, when they played the secret game, he basically had a forward who was like 6'7", 6'8".
Okay.
And he had another guy that was a little over 6 feet. But most of the guys that he played in that game, because many, many years ago, not even knowing who he was, I met the one they call Speaking, you know, he's from North Carolina. I mean, he might have been 5'9", 5'10".
Okay.
A couple other guys were like 5'9", 5'10". But these guys, it was a running game.
Right.
And they played the same way he played it. Good, strong defense. You know, pressure. All you know, you didn't have to worry about you being overmatched because you had to get the ball up. You had to get the ball up the court. And if you couldn't do that, and you go back and look at the teams that were successful, it was the same kind of matchup there. Matchup problems if you didn't have the really good guards. And it would take more than at least two of them to get the ball down the court.
Go back
to football. Most of the best guards, they might have been listed at 250, but usually you had like Mick Tinglehoff, 225.
Tinglehoff was like 240 and change. I remember him. Yeah.
He eventually got to be 240, and I still think they were lying.
You might be right about that because there were a lot of players who it seemed that if they were a lineman, they pushed them up 5-10 pounds more on the offense. If they were defense, they took 10 or 15 pounds off. Defensive guys usually were heavier.
Remember Jim Otto?
Yep.
How big he was. If you saw Jim, a picture of Jim Otto, he would remind you so much of the guy that played middle linebacker for the Steelers. Because both of them were like beans. They were tall.
Wow.
But they were like ass. Both of them. Lambert.
Okay.
Lambert never weighed 230.
He was like 240 or something.
Who?
Lambert.
He might have gotten to be 240 at the end of his career. Early on, Lambert only weighed like 220, 225.
I believe that. And he probably spent about 5 pounds of moisture through a whole game. I want to get to the issue at hand. Now, Fred, you coined the line, when, after watching sports, did sports become sports entertainment? When was the turning point for you?
I was well beyond college. because, you know, for me, on Sunday was church. For a long time, we didn't even have a television because I thought, you know, like I said, my family, we were and still are readers.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, we refer to them as Gen 3. A lot of kids, I mean, they got phones and stuff, but they sit up and read off the phone. Kyla plays volleyball up at Temple. She has all these shows they have, even that millennials and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I asked her something about the Masked Singer.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew what I was talking about, but it doesn't fall in the range of her idea of relevance, so she
right.
don't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Now if it was something like, her dad said she would watch stuff like Johnny Quest and some of these crazy
Yay!
Scientific shows.
I love that shit.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, but she's more likely to watch something like that. To sit and watch just what we call general television.
Right.
That ain't her. And
what moment changed her mind about sports turning into something else?
It was the 1960s when the third Super Bowl.
Third
Super Bowl changed the whole day because the New York Jets had no business being the Baltimore Colts.
Right.
For me, the light kind of went on with me because I think it was the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Minnesota Vikings, and I liked both teams because Carl Eller was from Winston-Salem. I knew his people.
Oh, okay.
And Eller was from our campus. Eller was from right across the Highway 52, where 52
okay.
Highway 52 and 40 intersects with each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the old connection because there's a new area where it happens there. But you know. It's maybe a mile, as they say, a mile down the road, down the street from Bowman Gray Stadium. That's where he played in Bowman Gray Stadium for Atkins High School.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So he would work out on campus in all season sometimes, so I knew who he was. But
mm-hmm.
beyond that, and I started watching in college because that was one of the things we had to do on Sunday afternoon. And me being me, even then, I went to the cafeteria. I ate and
yep.
went to the rec room and
mm-hmm.
picked me out a spot, sat down, usually went to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But that was strictly entertainment just because it was on. It had nothing to do with me being crazy about football.
Okay. So was there something you saw, and this goes to you too, G, was there something you saw that made you think, "Oh, wait a minute, what am I watching here?"
Well, it was the way that Joe Davis. I like the Jets. Don't get me wrong. I like the Jets
mm-hmm.
back then.
Right.
But something about the way that was being played out. I didn't like the way it was being played out.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Baltimore had a great defense. So I'm thinking, okay, this game's gonna be 3-3 or 10-3.
Right.
And when Joe Namath threw those two touchdowns, Emerson Boozer did what he did. I'm like, oh, okay. And then when the AFL merged. Money.
Well, that's why somebody would make an argument that the game had to be fixed in favor of the AFL's Jets and
Mike,
let the cash flow from there. Go ahead.
Okay, Mike. Now you're bringing up that touchy subject about being a fish.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I looked at, now at the time I didn't know that, what's his name, the guy for that caught all the passes from Bart Starr that was drunk and hung over.
Well, Max McGee. Max McGee. Mm-hmm.
I was curious, because see, the only thing the real reason that I listened and watched the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowls, like three or four
mm-hmm.
of them, was the fact that back then you heard a lot of names from HBCUs.
Yes, you did.
I knew about Buck Buchanan being from Grambling, you know, and several others. I knew Otis Taylor, for instance.
Yeah, where was
just go down and check the list off. And I was sitting there basically listening to see how many HBCU names got called.
That team had 11. Mm-hmm.
And they had, and they played, and most of them played major roles.
Yes,
okay.
They did.
So that was kind of what I listened to for the first time. But I remember meeting the actor that played for the Kansas
Fred
City Chiefs.
Yeah,
Fred Williams. And he made a comment. He made his comment to me, and my comeback was, well, I'm a Steeler fan because I don't remember. He made something about, and the comment he made was relative to not being from an HBCU. I said, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm a Steeler fan because mm-hmm. in my book, I don't remember nobody going. The only time once anybody ever got away from Mel Blount was that he got caught, man, he got caught with his back turned to the field. And Drew Pearson ran into the end zone.
Yeah.
Well,
I remember that play.
That didn't set too well with him, but he was because I had picked him up from the airport for
mm-hmm.
something that what's his name, Smith was doing his golf event or something. But anyway,
okay.
He just kind of looked at me and rolled his eyes, and I kind of looked back like I don't care. But you know. The thing that kind of piqued my interest back then was the fact that ever so often, considerably more so than now, you're like 11 guys from HBCUs on the Kansas City team. They had a few on Green Bay teams. And then you had the next year you had Oakland Raiders. You had a bunch more, Fred
yeah.
Brown, all these guys. They were loaded too. So my
yep.
thing was, I'm listening for, I'm listening to see what HBCU got players playing. And that's
mm-hmm.
how my interest grew when it came to, who came from a school like mine?
Exactly.
Because I remember watching a game in Elvin Bethea play, 29 miles
yep.
away, from 29 miles away, over at ENT. Well,
right.
where he lived in Greensboro at the time, because I think he's actually from New Jersey, but
mm-hmm.
his coach lived in this town called Kernersville, which is about halfway between Winston, roughly halfway between Winston and ENT.
Well, okay.
And Coach Groans lived on that side of town, which was rare because he was black
mm-hmm.
and but he was they were gentrifying that neighborhood. But anyway, he came, he would come over and talk to Coach Gaines, and because Coach Gaines knew him from track and field as much, which because he was as good in track and field as he, if not better than football. But
mm-hmm.
but anyway, my interest was always about, okay, what black school these guys from this play in. We reached this point with guys in the dorm. Like one of the guys down the hall from me, one of those years, and I wanted it had to be before my junior year. My junior year we had most of the RAs had rooms by themselves, and this joker right. comes in with like a 20-some inch color television.
Yes.
Hey, it was not a flat screen. It took both of us to get that thing upstairs.
I heard that.
I helped him bring his TV up from the car downstairs. And I think I had unlocked the door for him to do that because I, being an RA, had a key. But anyway, anytime I wanted to watch something on TV, you know, knock on the door and watch what I wanted to watch. But, you know, you had to be really locked in back then because, see, the way we view sports now versus then, it wasn't that big of a deal.
No, that's true. But, see, here's where I'm putting on my official Sly and the Family Oliver Stone conspiracy hat. Now, everybody talks about the Jets-Colts game and the possibility that it was fixed. I contend that it was Super Bowl IV that was the key. Not because the game was fixed as much as the matchup.
Kansas City game, right?
Yeah, well, you got to remember, team sports are about matchups. Kansas City is talking about the offense of the 70s.
Yes.
They had this big-ass offensive line, and they were hiding the small backs behind it. You saw Mike Garrett and Robert Tank Holmes and Warren McVay. They were all running behind these big mofos that you didn't see until the last second. So from a matchup standpoint, I can make a comparison between this team and Washington's team that had Doug because they had the hogs. Denver's line was light in comparison. I think Mecklenburg was maybe 270, but everybody on that line was light, and the Hogs just ate their ass up. So they had to get a flash touchdown and stuff, but you also had it when Doug got up. After we told him to get his ass up, he killed him. And that's exactly what Kansas City did. They just ran him to death. And this is a matter of pick your poison because Jim Carney was the starting safety, but he was Prairie View's quarterback. If they had really gone best man plays and Carney was the quarterback, I contend that Kansas City would have still beaten Minnesota because they were just simply outmatched. Buck Buchanan and everybody on that line was eating up Minnesota. Minnesota couldn't do shit with them. And, of course, when Otis caught that pass out in the flank and he missed the tackle, it was a wrap. And they were 13-point underdogs. Everybody forgets that. I mean, everybody talks about the Jets thing because it was so absurd. But that was the closest thing to a true game where they played even up and Kansas City walked their ass. And that's why the merger had to be made. Because the product was looking too shabby on the NFL side.
No. All right.
Okay.
Another reason for this.
Mm-hmm.
It has the AFL. Was a ground and pound. So you had teams like Minnesota ran the ball forever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Raiders were going to go bombs away.
You know what it is, G? You know what it is? I'm with you on the fact that the AFL passed more, but I can recall from the movie North Dallas 40, and I think we've all seen it here. They were so scripted in controlling the game.
Yeah.
If we really think about it, in the NFL, not the AFL, but in the NFL, how many times did you really see deep passing by an NFL quarterback?
Michael, I saw an Eagles-Steelers game in 1968. Yeah, 68.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Cage pass, for all game, for two teams, they pass 15 times.
Yeah,
out of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
I can see that.
And see, remember, Mike, going back to that era, you have to go back and look at the fact that you had people like Biletnikoff, Twilly, and a few other white boys. And that's on offense. But
that's right.
The only names I can remember who was the last team in NFL to have two white safeties.
How about that? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I would say Doug Plank and Gary Fentick, but I think somebody just
it was between those two and Harris and Waters with the Cowboys.
That's right. Waters and Harris. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since the beginning of that era to the present, how many quarterbacks have you had? And what's his name? Fisher.
Yeah.
For Washington, he was the last long-term starter at cornerback. And not only was he too small, he was too slow, but he could cover anybody.
Pat Fisher. Yep. Actually, Bernie Parrish, our friend Bernie Parrish, was also playing. I think he finished up with the Over the Hill Gang in the early 70s. I think he was the last one.
What was the guy? The guy number eight.
That's Larry Wilson. That's Larry Wilson. Yeah. Wilson
could
end this, I think, before 70.
You had Wilson. You had Worley.
Yep. Roger Worley was a successor. That's right, 23.
But remember though, for the most part, those guys could be those most of those guys you could say count on your hands how many they were because you had a white safety to quote unquote the white safety in the middle linebacker was supposed to be the quote unquote defensive quarterbacks of the defense, so. You always had that, but then you forget that before, I had this discussion with this guy. And I said, well, no, when you forget that Henry Davis was the middle linebacker for the Steelers.
Yes, Henry Davis was picked up. The reason I know this is because he was playing with the Giants. And, of course, in New York, you saw their preseason games. And they were talking about Henry Davis being a real player. I was surprised when the Giants traded him because I really thought he was going to stick in there and be a starting middle linebacker. So we know Willie was the first black middle linebacker. Who was the second one?
The guy that played for Washington. They got killed in an accident.
Oh.
Because the reason I remember him, his dad was a Marine, was in the Marines, and one of his duty stations was at Camp Lejeune.
Okay.
I don't think he graduated high school there because I think he went to college somewhere up north. But, matter of fact, remember, most of your black linebackers played outside.
That's right. They wanted speed. And
you had people like Bobby Bell.
He was definitely fast.
What's his name? Webster.
Yep. George Webster out of Michigan State played with the Oilers.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, you had Brazil and Washington and a couple of others that I can think of offhand.
Well, you know what? I would say, in all honesty, they weren't ready for Dr. Doom because he was the quietest star in the league. And we know that both leagues were trying to push their stars. But for whatever the hell was going on, because actually Houston had the first all-black linebacker corps.
Yep.
It was Webster. Shit, who was the other guy? Oh, Garland Boyette from Grambling. He was the second one. And there was a third brother whose name escapes me. But Houston was the first to put three black linebackers out there on the field.
And then
Lord help anybody laying up in there.
Did they switch it to 3-4 in the mid-70s?
They did switch to a 3-4, yes.
Because when Earl, we used to break up, and when he came along in 74, opposite the great draft that the Steelers had with the, four or five Hall of Famers together.
Mm-hmm.
In one draft. Well, he was Earl. I'm having a brain fart. I've been up since.
Old age sucks. I know what you're feeling.
old age is one thing. Old age and lack of sleep. There's a bad combination because I've been up since 2:30 this morning. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
When you go back and look at these cats and say, well, who's the baddest? Who's the greatest? I don't like those kinds of conversations because when you take time and look at the difference, just start with the difference in the rules and what you can and can't do. I mean. I saw Dr. Doom hit somebody in a game. I want to say it was Black. Okay, it was number 38.
Mm-hmm.
He was a backup running back for the Steelers. Okay, he hit him so hard. I wanted to pass out myself. That's how bad it is.
Guys, I have a question for both of you guys. I watched the game this weekend. And these referees are
say that shit, doggone it, I'm telling you shit.
Gary. I know you're not a Steelers fan, but let's harken back to that same question that you are bouncing around right now. What else can you do to protect quarterbacks? And now
Come
it's
on.
Going to receivers. Now it's going to receivers.
I am no genius. I am no Einstein. I cannot stand that these guys just touch the ball and throw
them
out of the game. Get out of here!
Stevie, one of us asking what the hell is going on in that damn play. I know.
Jack Lambert said it best. What can you do to protect, to provide him more protection? He said, put dresses on him.
that's not right.
On my worst day, I don't want to see a Raider or a Cowboy get hurt. I don't mind getting the hell knocked out of them, but I don't want to see them get hurt. And so my thing is this. Take whatever steps you need to take as far as equipment goes. But we have reached a point now where you can't block, you can't tackle, but it's still football.
Oh, you can't do anything.
Yeah, that's right. Look, we got to remember this. As I was watching the highlight packages, and I give the NFL credit. The highlight packages are well done. They're usually between 8 and 15 minutes, unless it was a really good game. And they point out certain things that lead to how Team A beat Team B. But they were also including the flags. And out of 13 roughing the passer calls, I could count at least 5 that were questionable. And the first one I saw just happened to be in the game between Denver and Jacksonville. And Teddy Bridgewater was going off. Now, Teddy's normally not an aggressive downfield quarterback, but he must have said something to his receivers because Teddy was like the mad brown bomber out there Sunday. And, of course, Denver won, but Trevor Lawrence, somebody farted on his mustache, and the hairs moved, and they threw the flag, roughing the passer. I'm like, what? This is what is going to fuck it all up because we know bad calls can make the difference between defeat and victory.
Now, with the outrage that has continued to grow over that blown call that may have cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl, the NFL reportedly now considering video replay of disputed pass interference calls. T.J. Holmes is here now with more on that. Good morning, T.J.
Hey, Robin, you don't have to be a Saints fan to be upset by this. You don't have to be a football fan, even a sports fan, but just a fan of basic fairness. Are we going to sit down in 2 weeks to watch the Super Bowl and wonder, is the right team in this game? Well, the integrity of the Super Bowl is in question. Next question, what are you going to do about it? And apparently one option is to sue.
Breeze. Pass is incomplete. No flag.
It's being referred to as one of the worst missed calls in playoff history. The New Orleans Saints missed a place in the Super Bowl after referees didn't throw the flag on this play. Many call it a glaring case of pass interference.
But that should have been a penalty. And John Payton is justifiably upset.
With their season over, the Saints were clearing out their lockers Monday. The emotions were still raw.
Every time you think about it, it's going to be tough on you.
It's frustrating.
And the firestorm shows no signs of dying down.
It was the most egregious missed call in the history of football.
To me, this is on the league office because you don't have a rule in place that would allow for that call to be reviewed.
ESPN is now reporting the NFL will consider a rule change, making pass interference calls subject to review, something Saints owner Gail Benson supports, telling ABC News she's been in touch with the NFL and that the team will aggressively pursue changes in NFL policies to ensure no team and fan base is ever put in a similar position again. And the fallout is spreading beyond the league, including reports of a possible class action lawsuit against the NFL filed by people who lost big money betting on the Saints. Meanwhile, one sportsbook in New Jersey is refunding all wagers on the Saints, tweeting, "Just think of it as good karma."
This has been talked about for years, Stray, and you can speak to this, about the idea of having those plays be reviewable. The reason they reject them is because they're usually subjective, mm-hmm. right? Two people can look at the same play and say, maybe that was pass interference, maybe not. But in a game of this magnitude, Super Bowl on the line, that blatant of a call, now we're talking about something.
You guys worked so hard to get to that point, now it's all over this season. And you said you don't have to be a Saints fan to be upset. No. A lot of fans out there are upset, but I know one Saints fan. They've been talking about it for days.
I've handled it very well. Because what can you do? But you don't want this to happen going forward.
No.
Is there anything that the commissioner could do? Not in this case. This is done.
Well, not really. Theoretically, Rule 17, Section 2, Article 3
what?
States that the commissioner's powers under this section allow him to reverse a game's result or reschedule the game from the extraordinary act that occurred.
That's not
technically, he could say, we're going to play this thing over.
Rise up and revolt.
Yes, but we're going to play this thing from 1:45. We're going to give them the ball first and 10 or first and goal. He could, theoretically.
It's
not going to happen, but in theory, he could.
So do you want the Rams fans mad at me or the Saints fans mad at me? That's what he's thinking.
You were there in the stadium. You were there in the Superdome.
Oh, yeah. You could see it. It was obvious. Obvious bad call. It could have been two calls.
Yep.
It could have been interference, and it could have been a personal foul because he hit him head-to-head.
I didn't say that. I didn't.
A lot of other people have been saying that, too. I'm not the only one.
Thank you, TJ.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News YouTube channel.
Okay. So we know about that bad call. Everybody and their mama saw it. My little sister Jenny in Louisiana was spitting mad about that, and all of the who that got screwed. But if you go back to what we were talking about at the top of the show and the gambling aspect of this, the question that they didn't answer, the question that I doubt they would answer, is just how much money was bet on that game. And this is before gambling really blew up and was considered acceptable now. We got to ask that. We know it's goo gobs, how many goos, how many gobs, and they have to be in the millions, y'all.
Well, yes, because we know for every legal book that's out there in Vegas where Gary's Raiders are hiding out now, For every dollar that's bet there legally, along with Jersey and a couple of other, you know, a few other places, who knows how many billions and billions of dollars? Because remember, you have people who bet on a single play, thousands of dollars on a single play.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to score in X number. They're going to score in X number of plays headed down the field. Well,
that's right.
You know, like I said, it's next to impossible to count how many millions and millions of dollars are actually bet on these various games. But you know, it's way up there. And because it's way, way, way up there, what you got?
That's right. But don't even count the money that was actually bet in the so-called reputable places underground.
That's what I'm talking about. Bookies
maintain their reputation by being good on their word. You know what happens?
The Las Vegas Raiders better be the team that people better watch out for misappropriation of funds.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about any legal betting.
No.
I'm talking about all the underground, the cornerstone. All I can say about that, Gary, is I remember a few years back there was a question whether or not the ball was hit and who hit the ball.
I said a ball
was hit by the Raider because he was trying to take a cheap shot at the Steeler, and in the process he hit the ball back. No, it didn't touch the ground. And Franklin Harris's fingers were underneath it, even if it did. So, and based on the replay that I've seen, it was a clean catch, brilliant run. And, you know, and to be honest, as big a Steeler fan as I am, I still ain't figured out how the Steelers were able to win all those Super Bowls with Franklin Harris.
We will return to Perry with it in just a moment.
Yeah.
Mike. Yeah, yeah. See the other.
If it please the motherfucking court, Counselor Wittit has made the case that this was, you didn't see what you saw. Because you didn't see what you saw, they didn't say what they said. Hereby, having the Pittsburgh Steelers to be guilty of trickeration in the first degree.
Mike, the difference between then and now and what all these purists overlook, it is so simple to do this thing now. You know, if you got an iPhone, you can play it back in what? We're not talking about rewinding film and all that other stuff you had to do back then. We're talking about a very simple thing. And remember, there is no shortage of cameras because
you got that right.
Remember when you have like four and five cameras covering the whole game. You got mm-hmm. you got five cameras between, and you got at least five cameras in each end zone.
Yep.
Not to mention the side shot, the overhead shot. You got a camera on the move. What do they call that? The track camera that moves back
track
and forth
camera.
Across the field.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay. It is so simple to do this today. I know Pittsburgh State and most CIAA mm-hmm. when they film games, they
mm-hmm.
take they have like cause I know Pittsburgh State has one on the field, one on the side, and
mm-hmm.
you shoot. So you got four cameras. You got four a Division II school, and most of the CIAA has is. A Division II school with four camera capabilities. That's equal to over half of what the NFL was using back then. And remember,
mm-hmm.
a film developed because it's self-developing. I mean, it's digital
true.
Now.
Right.
So,
and you can download all of that to a cloud for a computer. So it's possible you could use drones as cameras, too, or you could put cameras on drones, and it would be actually cost-effective if you had four of them at strategic spots in the stadium viewing the game. I can see that. That makes sense. But we started talking about gambling, and I want to bring it back to gambling because I want to go back to Counselor Wittit. Just how much money can you all imagine swinging from Oakland being up 7-6 and Pittsburgh winning 12-7? It's a championship game, so we know there's goo gobs on the line. We also know there's a lot of people that are pissed because both teams were fairly good in scoring. And you already know that's seriously under action, so the underdogs are having a ball, and they don't really give a fuck who wins.
Michael, you have the good guys and the bad guys. You
mm-hmm.
have the West Coast and the East Coast. You have all of these things working at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And I think all those factors added to the size of the pot. No question about it. Plus the fact that the Steelers and the Raiders were two of the hardest hitting teams in that era. It made for a great watch. So it would give you pause to think, now that game couldn't possibly be fixed. You know, they're both playing their asses off. And this is the other element I'm trying to bring out here. We've seen games, all of us, we've seen too much football. We know our football. But we also know when something stinks. And we've seen situations, even in Super Bowls, where the smell is predominantly like wild onions, toe jam, and leftover pig doo-doo. So we know there's some shit going on.
Well, I think let me say this. If they don't get this, run the buzzer, throwing people out of the games, if they don't stop doing this, this is going to be one of the worst football seasons ever. If they don't stop doing
this. This is a fact that we will have to consider with the field generals, as Radio Reggie is in the mix. Because there are so many black starting quarterbacks, it's a difference between Trevor Lawrence getting farted on and they throw the yellow flag, and Jalen Hurts or any other field general, Kyler Murray, get beat down to the white meat and no flag gets thrown. Reggie, can you hear us?
Gentlemen, can y'all hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Can we be honest about something? Cam Newton showed you. Donovan Nash showed you. I mean, some guy by the name of Randall Cunningham showed you. And always some guy named Warren Moon. I've seen Warren Moon get just punished when he was with the Minnesota Vikings. And they would just damn near break his ribs one of his last seasons. You got to understand something. In my humble opinion, when you have Russell Wilson running for his life and coming out in the offseason saying that I might want to move, and I want to look at the offense, hell, I was looking at the same thing this past week against Tennessee, but he's running for his life again. Hell, he almost got his
safety. Yes, he was.
I don't see enough in his game.
No,
you know, so I would say this. That as long as they got the blonde hair, pretty white boy to represent the pocket, they're going to protect them. Because Trevor Lawrence is a long-term investment.
Hold on. Why do you think they tell black quarterbacks they want them to stay in the pocket? They can beat their black asses down with it. That's why.
Thank you.
Fuck that shit.
Thank you. They want to load. Look, but I tell you one thing. My man in Baltimore, if he keep running like he did this past
season,
he ain't gonna make it halfway through the season.
No, he's not.
Well, you know, let's bring that up from where Reggie picked up, because Lamar Jackson has improved every year he's been in the league. There was one thing he had to do better. He peeled that onion, and the next thing you know, it came next year. The following year, he finally won a playoff game, and now he seems rather confident in running the team because he lost his two starting running backs. And yet, they still run the ball. That's where you say the offensive line gets credit, because you can't run, you can't play. Yes, you might want to throw the ball, but you've got to run the ball.
2021.
Yes.
You had 7 black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl the last 9 years.
Right.
Okay? You have 5 teams that are first place with black quarterbacks.
Right.
They, the NFL has got to come to a Jesus moment.
Well, Jesus is kicking and screaming as I see it.
Will Cam Newton get a job? That's the question.
Cam Newton getting a job sort of revolves around, will he get a clue?
Oh, that's touche. I can't go ahead and get that, Professor. Touche.
No,
get this shot.
No, Cam is in serious need of an ego stroke. And by that I mean his confidence has waned because teams have lost faith in him. I say teams collectively because he is the white prototype. They can't say Cam's too short. They can't say Cam's too light. He's 6'5", 250. So we know he's a prototype. What they did not like was the S. When he pulled the S from his chest, they said, we got to get this black motherfucker, because he was too confident. He was too
confident. And they need to go over Russell Wilson. Trust me.
But Gary, hold on. Professor, I got to ask the question about Big Ben Roethlisberger. Now, I'm getting a little sick and tired of Ben screaming, hollering, I got to play better. I heard that same crap when he lost the Super Bowl to the Packers, when his ass out there on the town playing the damn piano rather than getting in the playbook, and had one of the horrible games that he gave away the Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers. I don't see the criticism with Big Ben like it should, because I think Pittsburgh in trouble.
I think you're right. But see, that's partly him, and that's part of the organization, because if you notice, Pittsburgh has not done a good job in recent years. They're too heavy on defense.
Yeah.
Remember their receiver core since Ward's day, their receiver core has been 1-2 years gone.
Yeah.
Their running game, where is it?
It's in the hands of a rookie right now.
When is the last time they had rookies like that?
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
They're not only weak, but part of the reason they're weak at the run and pass is they're weak in the line.
I know Gary's not going to gloat so much, but that Pittsburgh game, y'all should have beat the Raiders. I mean, I couldn't believe how the defense let down that long pass. I was looking, are you kidding me?
Let's remember, the Raiders have some weapons now. Henry Ruggs can go deep. Renfro, he can go deep. They're tight end Waller. I mean, they got
tight end. They got one flaw, Michael. Raiders.
Chucky. The coach.
Yep, that's the name.
I am not sold on number four.
He's not sold on himself either. At least when Reggie McKenzie was there, he provided them with a line. But now this kid Carr really thinks he's all that, and he's going to end up getting beat down to white meat. And that's all right with me, because I never thought he was all that good in the first place. So, yeah.
Yeah, but he's going to get a reality check this year.
You have to.
Well, Reggie, in answer to your question about the Steelers, you know, ever so often it happened going all the way back to his Majesty, our first really good coach. From time to time, the Steelers need a game early where they just blow it. And then they come back from that game as they correct their game and move through the season. They get better and better and better, for real. But see, that comes from the top down. And I'm not sure. I'm not, you know, the old man would always call the coach in or go down or walk down on the field. Talk to the coach, talk to the players and whatnot.
Yeah.
We'll be all
yeah.
Good, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not so sure how these young bucks try to do that, or if they try to do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, then quite possibly think about it. To their credit, and I don't say this just because I'm a Steelers fan, but Only a couple of organizations out there that you can take back, you know, from the family that have been both good places to play and good teams. Because, you know, not knocking your team or nothing, or your old team or nothing, but, you know, they've only had two ownership administration, but at the same time, they ain't doing good. in a long time.
Yes, sir. Sure.
In my humble opinion, it will get better as long as Jerry is still there.
That's yeah. right.
But look at this. But peep this, guys.
That's
now
why
he
never won
the
Super Bowl.
Reggie, but now we see that the betting has gotten so bad that
oh, God.
We're being inundated with it. I mean, they're not even pretending. Now shows that used to be devoted to draft or to NFL gossip, they're on
mm-hmm.
gambling shows now. I've seen gambling shows on at least 6 different stations, cable stations. I'm not talking about the majors either. I'm talking about other homegrown cable shit that just pops up out of nowhere. And then, of course, there's the fan ones. We don't even count those. That's at least another 20 to 30. Everybody wants
hey,
to play.
Your local TV radio stations like KMBR out here in the West Coast. Every
oh, yeah.
Saturday morning between 7 and 8 o'clock, they have a gambling show.
A gambling show for hours. Now, think about this. The tasty side dish that comes with this are prop bets. That means if Reggie catches at least 2 passes for Washington in their next home game, you might get paid at 5-1. If Fred gets 3 sacks against an opponent, he'll pay you 15-1.
Mm-hmm.
If Gary can run over the ass of the quarterback at least once, they'll pay him 30-1. They've even gotten it down to the number of yards a quarterback should throw in a game, the number of catches a receiver makes in a game, and the number of yards are running back gains in the game. And all of this is supported mm-hmm. and buttressed by fantasy football. So, again, we got goo gobs of money. But when it comes to fantasy,
yes,
we don't know if it's a goo or a gob that's worth more.
Mike, let me throw this out there because, you know, you're talking about, you know, we're talking about something that's just quote unquote just sports, you know. Team,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yep.
The thing about it, we have, you know, there is a question now as to, you know, what is the economic health of our nation?
No kidding.
Okay, there's because see, you had people who got money because they didn't have jobs or their jobs. They were laid off or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I think what something like $2,800 or three.
Yep.
We'll just round it up $3,000
mm-hmm.
in the past year. Whether you wanted, you know, or needed or not, you got $3,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody didn't need that money, and what did they do with it? A lot of them went out and played. Played big on numbers. Some of them went out and played
mm-hmm.
big on games, whether it was football, basketball, or whatever. I mean, even to, of all things now in our area, in our
mm-hmm.
vicinity,
yep.
Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte, they have this
mm-hmm.
thing called cricket.
Really?
And there are people who, what do they call them, a cricket pitch or whatever it's called.
Right.
There's big money bet on cricket in Raleigh, Durham,
wow.
as well as in the Charlotte area. Okay.
Okay.
Looking at that, have you noticed they had just for the first time mentioned the debt ceiling?
How about that?
And that's because they can't say anything else relative to politics that's going to make anything other than the debt ceiling, because they printed
yeah.
money, they printed trillions and trillions of dollars for the pandemic, and now they're trying to print trillions of dollars again for
mm-hmm.
for the infrastructure and social programs, all that kind of thing. So, right?
Right.
And if I remember correctly, every time you borrow money at some, whatever the rate may be, and right now it's next to nothing on the interest rate. But, you know, at some point in time, somebody going to send you this letter that says, you us, you owe us, and your payments are this, that, and the other.
That's right.
China, $8 billion. We are in trouble because the Chinese have invested in land all over California, Oregon, and Washington.
You know, if you dance to the music, you got to pay it to the piper. That's right.
So, Gary, you saw the same thing I saw, where they're talking about there's a probability of the Chinese defaulting on their next payment, which is I can't remember if it's $30 billion or $300 billion. It's a whole hell of a lot of money.
Okay, Brad, this is the thing. United States of America owes China $8 billion. $8 billion.
Okay.
The Chinese have invested in American land in California, Washington, and Oregon. Now, what I see coming is this. They're going to trade A for B.
It's going to be a whole lot of A and a whole lot of B. but guys, I need to ask this to everybody on the thread. In your vicinities, Reggie, you, Richard area, Fred, North Kakalaki, Gary, I'm Kelly. What is the most immediate difference you've seen since the whole gambling bug has been killed? They done sprayed it with Raid and all that other old shit, and now nobody has anything bad to say about gambling. What's the biggest difference, guys?
I listened to an ESPN game this week, and there was an announcer who publicly said, "I need your money on this game."
Get the fuck out of here. Damn.
Well, Mike, we're a little different from all these other places, because we have the word on the street is you've heard this place called Cherokee, North Carolina, which is code for Indian reservation, owned by the Tennessee. And we also have one, and it's a couple of votes away from having one about 30 miles from here. Stretched out right now. I say 35 miles away. They call the Lumbee Indians.
Yeah, that's right.
They have been schooling them around for a century or better.
Mm-hmm.
Not to recognize them as a tribe because they don't want to have to pay them, but the courts has ruled in their favor, so they're gonna have to pay them for years and years and years, plus interest. And you know, you have been able to gamble in these facilities for years.
Yeah,
and see,
but this is true.
And the crazy thing, Mike, is this.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Native Americans are in charge because you know they have nation status. They don't pay taxes to the United States.
That's right.
Because white folks don't control it. There's all these rumors about malfeasance and corruption and all that other stuff. But when they go check the book, ain't no problem.
Exactly. They know what they're doing, but that's part of the spin. We got Tony McClain with us as well. Tony, I was betting 5-2 that you were going to get here before 11 o'clock.
Lieutenant Mac, what's up, T? You can just insert my 5% through direct deposit. That's all I want.
But T, I gotta throw something at you real quick, T. Okay, from what you've seen this past week with the quarterback and the injuries, and how a certain quarterback in Jacksonville was treated with kid glove, what's your thought?
He's gonna be, you know. He's, you know, in the words of someone much smarter than me, they're going to beat him down to the white meat before the year is over with, because they really don't have that many weapons. Their defense is tired from game 9 of last year, so it's a rebuilding thing. But it didn't take long for the injuries to start to kick in, because it looks like Mr. Fields is starting Sunday. Jacoby Brissett is going to be taking over for Tua Tagovailoa. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that?
I said you said that real good.
It took me 8 years to learn how to say it, man. All those years of standing in the mirror and looking at my ugly mug forced me to do something a little bit different. So I was able to learn a few things along the way.
I was getting ready to dispense it on just a Smith, but what the fuck? Yes, two attack of my own.
That was too funny.
Okay, so now
I was listening to what you guys were talking about. Here in my home state, October 7th is D-Day for professional betting in the lordly state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. And they're going to be spending more than nutmeg those games, I can
Put it this way. Give me the finger. And his wife, Miss Fingers, they're pissed.
You know they're pissed. Mm-hmm.
Mike, she gave me her middle finger the last time she saw me. That's how nice she was.
I know.
This is too funny.
But you know, now the situation with the field generals is going to be even more precarious. You know, we saw some close wins, but we didn't see the point spread covered. So, you know, they're going to be the disrespect that's been shown to Cam Newton is a focal point to that. We don't know how many more quarterbacks will get hurt before they call Cam up, if they call him at all. But they've been wanting to change the league. Well, you know they got to take a shot, Reggie, but see, they don't want that arrogant black brother to come in and succeed. He doesn't have a losing record, so they can't say that. He got hurt, but the unspoken rule is when a quarterback gets hurt, when he's back, he gets his job back. That wasn't the case in Cam. No, I will refer again to the professor who properly deduced that Cam was given the word he had to take the fall. And he literally did, but he didn't do it because he wanted to. So, again, this brings the credibility factor in the mix. Is this really sports entertainment that we are all betting on?
Mike?
Yes.
You're talking about this is the word you use from time to time. Integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about the NFL today. when is the last time the NFL showed anything even close to what we perceive to be genuine integrity?
Mm-hmm. How many minutes do we got to answer that question? Because it may take a little bit.
I'm still smarting from the Russell Wilson pass. You want to talk about integrity? I'm just asking again with the W5 question that we always refer to. Why the fuck would you throw a 1-yard pass when the fuck were you going to do it? Because you knew if you're going to throw something, throw a quarter route where there's a less likelihood of an interception.
Michael, if you saw the replay, you saw the faces of Carroll and the offensive coordinator.
I saw it in his face. It was the face of somebody who had gotten too cute and had fucked
up.
Marshawn Lynch on the podcast said when they called the play, everybody in the huddle dropped their head. Now, my question to Russell Wilson, how in the ham sandwich you didn't change the damn play? I blame Russell Wilson for that.
Russell Wilson's a company man. If you got to look at this from a business standpoint, he's a company man. He got
you know what, Mike? That might cost him a shot at the Hall of Fame, and I'm being honest. That one
he won't get a first ballot shot, but you know what they'll say? Well, he threw that interception, so no, we won't put him in this year. And besides, he's a black quarterback.
Don't you think Randall Cunningham's a Hall of Famer? I do.
It ain't no guarantee.
Russell gonna get in. Ain't no guarantee.
Reggie, I know you went to Virginia State and all that, but let's keep it 100 here.
Here comes the shot.
I repeat, we are talking about the NFL. We're talking about the organization that says there's no such thing as getting hurt. Concussions don't matter. Take two one, just don't get called.
Take two one, don't have any adverse effect. Yeah.
And that's from, I mean, their integrity is as impeachable as that of Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and any other president you want to need. The NFL is right up in all of them.
I'm telling you.
A bunch of old white men.
Yes.
Who have little to no respect for anybody other than outside their circle.
That's right.
So, you know, that's what you're dealing with here. So you don't know what they told Mr. Wilson to do.
Forget about Wilson. You don't know what they told. About Marshawn Lynch. They're not going to let him in the Hall of Fame either because he knows what happened.
Yep.
He knows if he was going to run that cross buck into the line, somebody was going to get called for holding if he scored. I guarantee, as sure as I'm black.
I'd rather for them to call it than to do that stupidity they did on a damn 1 foot line.
I agree.
Tony Dungy said, "We got to be kidding me." That was the dumbest thing. And then the offensive coordinator had the nerve to try to justify making the call.
Exactly.
You're on the one yard line.
I'm telling you, my youngest daughter who knows nothing about football. She said, why didn't they give it the 24? Yeah, why didn't they give it the 24?
Unbelievable.
Allow me a certain leverage here.
Please.
Locally, we have been on PBS, we've been watching the story of Cassius Clay / Muhammad Ali, or Ken Burns documentary, right? And in several of the fights that he had, there was always this question: was it fixed? Who knew the guy yeah, so what, he punched out so-and-so, he wasn't no good, no way, and this and other. And some of them swear that the Norton fight was fixed and some of the other things was fixed, this kind of stuff. But that's always going to go on. And it falls in line with the same thing that most white people will say and do in their situations where they either don't control or can't control or gets out of hand with them. It must have been fixed. We were just going through what, 4 years of that, almost 5 years of that with the election.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been fixed. It was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And as a country, we're at a point now, again, we're back to that money they've been printing. That nobody's talking about how we're going to pay it back.
Come on.
When we're going to pay it back. So this whole thing, you know, T-Mac talked about Jimmy the Finger and Mrs. Finger.
And the baby finger.
I'll say, Professor, say that with a smile when you say that.
We haven't had integrity in sports, realistically, going back to when before when the finger, Mr. and Mrs. Finger, was in diapers. If not,
mm-hmm.
And because of you don't know from one game to the next which one's fixed, which one ain't.
Mm-hmm.
What did we just have happen in one of the major horse races?
You had a DQ. You know, the Kentucky Derby where that cheater got caught, the Kentucky Derby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he been cheating for years.
and realistically, for the number of times that guy has been caught, he shouldn't even be licensed to even touch a horse.
Is that when them horses see him coming, they run?
Reggie,
put it this way. The horse would actually beat another horse just to make sure that he doesn't come by there.
Here's a guy who is so into this cheating thing. They shouldn't even let him watch cowboy movies, because there again you get to watch horses.
There you go. This just in, my long shot came in.
Yeah,
I bet 25-1 that Patrick Farrar would be in before 11. He is in. I'll go to the pay window. Patrick, where are you? Can you hear me? What's up, fam? What's up, dude?
What's up, fellas?
Here comes the news.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, fam? Mm-hmm.
How y'all doing?
So I'm cashing my check because Patrick got in before.
Patrick, not to be rude, but have you memorized the Oregon fight song yet?
That's just wrong. Everybody got jokes.
It was their day. We're beating 9 times in a row, so it was time for them to win one at least.
And you know what? It probably doesn't hurt them for the thing anyway. I wouldn't think, but
I told Mike last week. I sat back and made it gonna win at least one or two games anyway. When you got 45 freshmen sophomores, come on, man. Yeah. And 20 guys who left the team the last 2 years in the NFL, pretty expect.
What are you going to do with all that orange sauce?
Hey,
Patrick, I'm not going to say quack again, but I just say we say what we do. We do you like we do because we love you. No, that other Yang.
Yeah, hey, you know, I knew what was happening, so it don't bother me. Hey, I can tell you, here's the real issue is this. And the real issue is going to be systemic to a lot of teams. Now, you know, this guy, the quarterback, CJ Stroud, a freshman, he's played four games. Twice already he got freshman of the week from playing. And they got folks out there calling for him to be removed to play some other white kid. Now, here's the issue. They got the kid, Quinn Ewers, who got $1 million deal sitting on the bench. Ryan said he ain't going to play. He ain't even going out there this year.
Wow.
The trick is this. If you got a kid, a quarterback, who got $1 million deal on a bench, they just get the kid Henderson from Virginia. Aubrey just gave him a deal. Here's the
Holy
problem
shit.
That's going to be. He's probably going to go to all these schools. You bring somebody in that creates marketing, and they don't perform.
Yep.
You got people yelling for him because they want to see him. Is
that
going to
really
win? No. It's going to happen at other schools too. You got somebody. You got somebody who is a star and makes the team go. But because the other guy got the sponsorship at a particular financial level, you want to play him and sacrifice maybe a win? That's coming, guys.
Yep.
Tony,
you're
going to actually be taking bets soon. Tell everybody what this means in terms of Connecticut now, if they've had a come to Jesus moment. Or if they had a come to Western Union moment and they went into those bets.
It definitely wasn't a come to Jesus moment. That's for sure. The thing is, this thing dragged on and on and on because, you know, let's be quite honest. The everybody knows the two major casinos here in Connecticut, Foxwoods and why can't I think of the other one? This is terrible. But long story short, yeah, it really. But the main thing in this instance is that the state wanted to try to mess with the Indian tribes that run both of the casinos. And quite frankly, the Native and they said, oh no, you can't come in and just. Yeah. This isn't Manhattan Island for $24, basically.
I know that's right.
They basically was trying to tell them. So they're still going to get the majority of the action. The state will get a healthy cut, but if it's done correctly, it could. Let's put this way. Will they put up New Jersey type numbers? Probably not. But will they generate some money for the state?
Oh, yes. Hell yeah!
Absolutely. And see what has always been the hook for Connecticut was that they were basically the stopping post between New York and Boston.
True.
Now look,
yep.
if you're a casino guy or gal, you're gonna you're still gonna go to Vegas. Hell, you probably only come to Connecticut if you don't feel like driving up to Jersey for the most part. Now there are some places in Boston, but what's gonna happen with them is they're gonna get a lot of the stragglers. They're gonna get a lot of from the mean streets of Coscob and Stamford. That's where they're gonna that's where they're gonna get a lot of guys. And they're gonna get some New Yorkers, and they're gonna get some folks from Massachusetts and Rhode Island and what have you. So put it this way: if it's done correctly, this could be a very, very lucrative thing for the state.
Yes.
But as I invoke the Butt Sisters again. This state has always had a history of finding a way to F things
mess
up.
It up.
And so we'll see. I think for their sake, it's probably good that at least they're doing it during football season. Actually, They'll probably get, you know, they're going to get basically the colleges, the NHL, and then eventually NBA, and they'll get postseason baseball. So so it actually probably is a very, very good time. The test is going to be during the dead season, I guess, sort of like after the Super Bowl when it's just college basketball or what have you. But again, this is a college basketball. This is it. That's my point. This is a big, big college basketball thing. So whatever they lose, they may make up during the NCAA tournament.
And Tony, let me add it, Tony. This year, because there's more access to buildings, and the idea of Connecticut being back in the Big East. Coming in the garden, coming in the Jersey, brother. They have an article here in the local paper, Star Ledger, about already Seton Hall is ready for the tournament. So if they go to the tournament, they got to play Connecticut twice. So it's going to be on and popping.
Oh sure.
No shit.
And see the other thing to me is. I think this is their year to host a regional as well. See, they always get a women's regional because of the Lady Huskies, but they may get a men's and women's regional this year. I think every two years they host one. Now, the arena in Bridgeport, which is basically somewhat replaced the Hartford Civic Center, which is now known as the Excel Center, is the place where a lot of things are happening. Now, the women and the men play a handful of games at the Civic Center. Actually, the women play more games at the Civic Center than the men, believe it or not.
Right.
But they usually have a regional either in Bridgeport or possibly – you know, hosting it at stores, you know, that, you know, the first round, if they, you know, if, you know, first round is usually always, they always go to, you know, stores is usually always one that gets one because they know that they're going to whatever. But yeah, it's, you know, and after all the hand wringing and whatever, they probably picked the perfect time to get this done.
This is going to be interesting. I don't think any school kid in Connecticut will have to worry about lunch after the first few months of this.
Yeah,
there's going to be serious revenue infusions all over the place. But Tony, now you're in a state that has it. Patrick and I are in a state that has it. Fred's in a state that's going to get it if they don't. And T, Gary, I don't know if you have it out there in California to that level, but what is the biggest difference now? Is it commercials? Is it the number of commercials? Is it the fact that you can roll your ass down the street and bet $5 on the Raiders? What is it?
Well, it's you can bet any casino, any city you can go bet.
Right.
One, two, three, four, five, seven, eight, nine. We have 13 casinos.
Now, why would we know the guy would know how many are there?
Mm-hmm.
He's been putting some miles on there.
We got one about 2 miles away from my house.
See?
And in the surrounding states, you know, there's a bunch of them in Phoenix. There's definitely a bunch. Of course,
Oregon as well,
and that little sleepy town in Nevada, I believe they still have their stuff too.
Reno gets most of it, Northern California, they usually go to Reno.
Okay. Well, I have to bring this up against all this. Again, my count from reading and looking at the reviews of the games and the highlight packages, I saw 13 rough in the passes. At least five of them were broken.
And that was probably just one game.
Oh,
the one that the league is talking about, without question, is now the taunting rule. This taunting rule is ridiculous.
Yes.
That rule is for black players.
No, Gary, you're right.
Absolutely.
I've had the taunting called at least four times in the last 3 years, and each time it was a black player on a white player.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When was the last time? You saw a
tawny
rule for
a
white player.
No.
I'll wait.
Here's the problem. Here's the real problem. The owners want to stop the aspect of the game becoming out of hand because of physical altercations.
Yes.
My thing is, as rough as hockey is, folks love it, you know. And the NFL, I'm not for a whole lot of fighting, but I can understand if a guy hit a guy and hurt his taunting them, that's something else. But this taunting rule, bro, has had fire this week from a lot of players, and I don't know if they're going to change this year. You know, if somebody's wrong,
it's going to change this year because the Raiders.
Well, I don't know if it was the Raiders who were the ones they were targeting, but the penalty itself is bullshit.
Ridiculous.
You know,
this is no different
in college when they took points off the board because somebody boogalooed in the end zone or whatever the fuck it was.
It's like the
odds makers ain't going to like it. The bettors ain't going to like it. And if it turns out that a game or an incident where a player scores a touchdown and it's waved off because of taunting,
and it's going to happen.
Well, remember, guys, the Celebration Bowl just a couple of years ago when Central scored a touchdown and they called unsportsmanlike and the kid wind up missing the extra point. And Central winds up losing.
Right.
So it's already happened. And what you're also seeing, on the college side now, the big thing is the targeting rule. And they are basically trying to go against physics, as Fred has said. When a guy, in a sense, turns around and then you have to literally, like, if this is supposed to be for less injuries, hey genius, you're probably going to cause more injuries than guys trying to hold. Mm-hmm. We see an example, William Hayes, for the former Winston player for the Titans a couple years ago. He pulled up on what looked like to be a big sack, tore his knee.
Sure did.
And has never played again.
And hasn't played. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where's the love for him? You know.
You got to remember, these are white officials. These are white officials making rules for black sport.
Black sport.
You know,
absolutely.
That ain't gonna make no difference. That bullshit is long gone. The brothers always play differently. They play faster. They play with more intensity because
they're
feeding their family.
I was growing up. Used to go out to the playground and play basketball in the playground. That was rough.
Right.
Basketball. That's true.
Mike, but they're not going to make any exception for that. Good, Fred.
Mike, the thing you got to look at here is not necessarily a black or white thing. when it comes mm-hmm. to this officiating. You just have to remember that officiating is subjective. We said it earlier tonight. You look. Mm-hmm. We can all look at a same. We can all look at the same play and see it and see the same thing.
That's
true.
Judge it differently.
Right.
I have actually worked as a referee, and you look at being one way as a referee, as a statistician, you look at a whole set of different things. As a statistician, you watch the whole motion, but you could care less about he hit him with the crown of his head. Okay.
Man.
Somebody else has hit on this already, but so I just repeat it. It is physically impossible to hit the way they're saying you have to hit on certain plays because
that's exactly right.
your shoulder's going to go behind where your head goes. Now, if you can figure out a way to hit somebody with a shoulder without hitting with a head, you're beyond me because I was never able to do it.
I will say this. Okay, Patrick.
Fred, a guy last week, I think it was, he pulled up, hit a guy with his shoulder, but probably shoulder hit the back of the helmet of a guy, and he got kicked out of the game. And what's worse, guys,
even when they replay it, they're still messing it up because it was cooked. I saw the play. He clearly was using his shoulder, but again, if the quarterback or running back, whatever, basically turns, you know, for lack of a better word, if they do the JFK, dance, basically,
back to the left,
they're going to call it. And it's ridiculous. And not to mention the fact that, you know, a 4-hour game becomes a 7-hour game because of that.
No joke.
Now, we got to understand something. These officials aren't ready for this. We already know the game is faster. As fast as we think it is, as fast as some of us have even played it, it's even faster at the pro level.
Yes, it is.
The only time we've ever seen a team successfully react before they hit somebody was with the Dallas Flex defense, Harvey Martin, Randy White, and all those cats. The Flex was a read-react defense, the first of its kind, where you were looking at it and making judgments on the fly. And it's no joke that nobody has done it since. In a game where you have to react, it's almost impossible to do the read first and then react on defense.
Are you referring to the Dallas Flex defense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was eliminated because it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The only people it worked for was them, and only because they found ways to make it exceptions for certain things. Remember, that defense could not generate good pass work. They could stop at run, but it couldn't like the pass work.
And a major reason why, you know, it wasn't as good later on because, you know, for all his genius, Tom Landry was a stubborn SOB. Remember, he couldn't figure out that Roger Staubach was a better quarterback than Craig fucking Morton.
True.
I mean, for Christ, you know, and look, this is, you know, I'm not trying to start any fights or whatever, but the whole thing. Because I'm neutral here in this. Because the reason why Chuck Knoll was always able to beat Landry's teams, it goes back to what Mike said. A lot of times the Cowboys were just too, they would get too cute. See, the Steelers were hard-nosed, whether they were the running Steelers of the 70s or the throwing Steelers of the 80s. The one constant was they were rock solid. The thing yeah. with the thing with Landry and all of them, now great, they had great players, great personnel. They were ahead of the game in regards to evaluating talent, whatever. But when the lead caught up to them, they never changed. And most importantly, Landry. Landry, as great as he was a stubborn SOB. And,
that's right.
You know, he's very he's very lucky that, and again, I'm not taking away from his legacy, but if Tom Landry had been coaching in, say, if he had started his career, say, in the 80s as opposed to in the 60s, he'd have never done 30 years. He maybe does 10 or 15. He doesn't he doesn't because he basically, you know, he basically became an institution. And you know, and firing Tom Landry was like firing God.
That's right.
And even Mike, even God would have picked Roger Staubach over Craig Morton.
You know dang all well he would have. That's exactly right. Look, as far as these holy rollers are concerned,
Mike,
it won't matter. Whether they're holy rollers or hardcore street cats, when they want that action, they're going to bet. This thing is, the cat is out of the bag, Pandora's box, hope, faith, charity, all that shit, it's gone. They're going to fucking bet. And if what you said was true, and I don't doubt it, about one announcer saying, I bet on so-and-so to win, well, can we say credibility just flew the coop?
Well, I can tell you this much, and Mike, we discussed earlier this evening. You know, I have to watch these shows in order to, you know, look at the landscape of what they produce to put on one of my shows.
Right.
But the preponderance of information about quarterbacks is sickening. Everything is about the quarterback, and what gets lost in it, unless you sift through the right show, is having some equal attention to players that are making things happen behind the guys who are not the center, behind the center. And that's sickening me. But we all know why it's doing it. It's driving the betting lines to where its success is where it's at now. And they're going to continue to talk about the quarterbacks, but they're not talking about players outside of that.
I was talking to Tony about this earlier, and you got to look at the field generals now the same way I would be looking at jockeys at the horse track. Jenny and I were talking about this too. You have a racing form with all the jockeys and who they ride and all their predictables, how fast, grass, dirt, turf, whatever, wet. All of these factors come in now. General Jackson will be looked at totally different, and watch how they talk about him this week in whatever game he's playing. They're going to talk about him as if he's sitting on top of a horse waiting for that bag of oats at the finish line. I swear to God, the analogy about jockeys and quarterbacks is similar now. And we all know the Kentucky Derby started with a field of 15 black jockeys.
There you go. Yeah.
General Jackson's only problem is I hope he don't try any more of those clips into the end zone.
Yep.
He gonna blow your damn neck.
And well, you know what he said today?
Fred, you know what he said today? He ain't gonna do it again. And when he did, I said, well, what in the fool wrong with you? What are you trying to do? Just shut the woman.
I don't know. Hey, he may have all kinds of skills, but tumbling ain't one of them.
Thank you.
You know, the thing is also, over the years, that Kansas City game has now become a rivalry game. Let's call it what it is. It's basically this generation's Brady versus Manning.
That's
they won't
right.
come right out
That's
and say
right.
it.
Well, they won't
but
say
it,
that both the quarterbacks are black.
Well,
you're right.
See, they can't say it because if they say that, then you got to give two black quarterbacks credit at a higher level than you want to do that.
How
and since
dare
you don't want to do that,
how
what do you do?
Dare you? How dare you?
The deal now is to do that kind of to say that kind of thing, and then without, you know, giving them too much credit, because remember, those dark people can't they can't leave.
That's right. Those dark people can't think. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there'll be a lot of toleration going on, because there'll be a lot of trickeration going on, but there'll be a lot of speculation going on too, because the gambling bug will get you if you don't watch out. And believe me, the gambling bug, his mama, the kids, they all over the damn place.
Mike, who's gonna eat more, the gambling bug and his kids, or the children of Connecticut? I'll wait.
Oh, shit. There you go. You're right about that.
I know Jerry D. Lewis, what was this whole song, a whole lot of shaking going on? There's going to be a whole lot of burping going on, that's all, as far as I can see.
You know that's right. You know that's right. And I know you guys, Tony, I know you saw the piece I showed you from John Oliver and Last Week Tonight. Now.
Oh, yeah.
This thing has gone mainstream. You know, and like I said, John Oliver is a humorist. He makes fun of stuff and all that.
Yeah,
but he's really good.
He's good.
But he nailed this with sports
now. Hey, Michael, you better watch his back, because you're going to be after him.
I'm telling you.
But the thing is, it's, you know, that thing is actually dated, because it goes, what is that, about
three years ago?
Yeah, that's right. But it's still on point.
He was right on point with him. Yeah,
it's still on point.
Mm-hmm.
I love the commercial parodies. Well, maybe, you know, are you? I love that and the Joe Namath piece. Are they making money off of it? Yep. Even Joe in his somewhat sedated, less drunk state could pick up that in a heartbeat.
Let's not remember, Joe Namath was told to sell his interest in Bachelor's 3 because of the potential for organized crime, the work that went into the NFL.
Do you realize now that Joe Namath would be wearing pantyhose sitting next to Miss Finger at this point in time right now?
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Mike. Woo!
Yeah. And I'm telling you, if they did that commercial today, they'd probably use Caitlyn Jenner instead, but I digress. But I'll say this one. If you don't think that the NFL is trying to make money off of gambling, then grits ain't groceries, eggs ain't poultry, and Caitlyn Jenner's a motherfucking man.
Please,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he still is to me.
Yeah.
He's a dude in a dress. You know,
yeah, really, really, really. A very ugly, a very ugly dude, too, on top of that.
Please.
Yeah, and that's right. Dude don't look like a lady. Dude is ugly.
Good God.
We are getting to final thoughts, and we put some good stuff in the pot tonight. You know, we're going to keep track of the field generals. We will reveal what their record is Saturday as we go into week 3.
Mm-hmm.
We know there's a lot of subplots going on. You know, how will Justin Fields do finally getting his chance to run the team? You know, will Cam return? You know, there's a lot of other stuff going on, but the most important ones are that and the level of officiating. How authentic is it going to be? And will Fred's dream of sports entertainment put itself out there live and live in color? These are questions we hope to have answered in the future weeks. And she say this, dear Patrick.
And just keep an eye on, they had a piece on HBO with Brian Gumbel about Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about making money, printing their own money. We get a chance, just watch it. Al Davis and Sheldon, who they thought, you know, was a knucklehead. He fooled them. That's enough. All right, go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
The opinions expressed by Gary Norris Ware are not necessarily those of the management, but they're fucking true.
No shit. All right, well, Patrick, set it off for final thoughts, please, if you have anything left.
I'll set it off. Well, I tell you what, I had something in sports, but today I really have to say something about somebody not in sports, but somebody who was bold enough to be black and didn't give a damn daddy day, Melvin Van Peebles.
All right, yes.
Melvin Van Peebles really had a, I wrote on Facebook, he inspired and influenced me to be bold and be black. And he did that. And in the picture, when I was in college, the picture Sweetback Badass came on.
Sweetback, yes.
And there was a theater downtown in Columbus that would show black movies, you know, like Shaft, they show for like 2 weeks. Melvin Van Peebles with Sweetback's Badass song, they played for 4 days and shut it down because it was killing white folks, you know.
I know that's right.
But other stuff he's done, just the fact that he had such a bold way of doing things and didn't let ideas stop him from doing things that he needed to do, and particularly about being a black man, whether you liked it or not.
Awesome. That is beautiful. Reggie, are you there? I thought Reggie was hiding in the weeds eating a sandwich. Okay. Professor, come on with it.
Well, let me get on what Patrick said about Melvin Van Peebles. I'm old enough to remember Sweetback Badass song and all those kind of all those real movies come back in the day. And I don't care if they were exploitive or whatever. They put a lot of actors and other background people to work. And that's how we grew into Spike Lee and some of the others that are doing the great things like Singleton and some of the others who are doing great work and have done great work. Also, we simply had to meet Leon Deion Sanders for maintaining his effort. Hopefully he has had his reality, his full reality check after this past week when he got his ass kicked. But anyway, I'm not overly moved by all the stuff that he does. He has some things that make sense. So, you know, kudos to him. But he's also finding out in the process that not only do some black folks know how to coach football, he's also learning.
Come on.
He and his staff don't know everything, too. So that's another good point about that. I'm working hard on finishing up the men's sports encyclopedia for men's basketball. I've reached a point now where I'll hopefully finish it tomorrow doing a piece on Coach McClendon and the secret game and a couple of other things that he's noted for. But, you know, as I go through this, the more I go through this and the deeper I get into it, the more I like it. And I don't say that's just something I'm doing, but, you know, it's all about us telling our own stories. And, you know, we just had Ben Wallace and
Bobby Dandridge
for the Hall of Fame. I'm going to do a piece on several other young men who should be going in. We can't go with so much with black women for HBCUs because only a couple of them have played. But then my other question is, is this the NBA Hall of Fame or is it the Basketball Hall of Fame? And if it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, we got a bunch of coaches who should be in. You can reach me at www.blackheritage.com. I'm on Facebook as well as my own website.
Thank you, Fred. That's awesome tonight. Gene, come on with it.
Yes, sir. I want to go back to the beginning of the show. We have a Native American Asian American and Black American women
mm-hmm.
going missing in this country.
Yes, Lord.
Right.
I'm so sorry for the Patino family.
Mm-hmm.
The Patino family got more press.
I can believe.
Alabama, the Five Blind Boys, the Gospel Extravaganza.
That was a battle. That was a battle too. That's a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. 4 p.m. I've checked that. Check that. 4 p.m. Eastern. 7 p.m.
Westwood.
And that was the followed by the Music Therapy Mindstream Saturday, the Stir Fry, 2 p.m. Followed by Gary and the Great Liberal Cove at 4. T-Mac, something in the pot, please.
Speaking of gambling, the National Hockey League has completed its gambling investigation of San Jose Shark forward Evander Kane, and said Wednesday they found no evidence that he bet on his own team. Now, the investigation, which was conducted by Patterson Bell Cap Webb Tyler LL, a bunch of white Jewish lawyers. I was just, we'll be here all damn day.
Right.
In conjunction with NHL security, was spurred by allegations in social media by Kane's future ex-wife. The couple recently entered divorce. The couple recently entered divorce proceedings. Gee, I wonder why. They seem like such a nice couple. While the NHL considers this specific matter closed, the league says it reserves the right to investigate any new information relating to gambling accusations. The league has also said it's opened a new investigation into Kane for unrelated allegations of wrongdoing that were brought to the league's attention. The league did not specify further on that matter.
Oh, let me, as a mayor representative, let me explain to you what they mean.
Translate me.
What they did was, now they accuse them of allegedly,
sexual abuse
and sexual battery. Okay, let's be real. They want Mr. Kane out of the game. I don't know what he did. I don't know who he pissed off, but they want him out of the game.
Gary, he married a woman of another hue.
And it's currently making seven million, and she's angry,
she's like, well, if I don't get him on the gambling, maybe I'll get him for trying to have sex with me on a battery.
She's going to hit him with it. She wants the bag, yes. And this is what Karens do. Karens, Beckys, whatever the fuck you want to call it, these toxic bitches do this with this in mind. And
Evander Kane didn't have enough sense to really understand the depth and breadth of this. I'm not saying Canadian brothers are slower on the uptake, but you can't get away from that much money.
Mike, I think I think our Lord and Savior Chris Rock said it best. Stay with him like ours.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way, as we put this one to bed. Last week, Gary talked about the Raiders' new home. Now, we know what the old one was called. As we leave the show, we will pay homage to Gary by recognizing the new base for the Raiders. Say that song. Don't forget, Thursday night, there will be a Blueberry Tea set as the groove will continue 8 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, the Death Star 2 p.m. Eastern, followed by Gary and the Grey Leopard Cove at 4. Yeah.